Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Helen Elliott is a mother of two daughters, and she loves to read and write and travel and being outdoors, loves music and working out, but most of all, she loves the Lord. And she is also an author, and she's written a book called The Vow, A Journey of Truth. Helen, welcome to Life Quest.
Hi, nice to hear from you.
I'm glad that you can be here today. I need to ask you, why did you write this book?
Well, many years ago, probably almost 10 years ago, I went through a divorce, and like most of us, went into a depression state and ended up on the floor and kind of lost of life and wanted to give up everything and heard from God, and he brought me out of it. And my husband had an affair, and I swore that I would never do that and made a vow to God that I would not ever do that again until I was married. Again, or I would just, be with him. So that's kind of how it began.
You're calling this the vow. Now, is it a specific vow, or are you speaking in generalities?
Well, it started out, of course, in the pain. It started out because of the broken vow of the marriage. But what it evolved into was everything that I promised God, that I needed to be obedient in. I needed to follow what I said. And learned, wow, there were a lot of things that I, said that I would do and I didn't do, and a lot of things that I shouldn't have done that I, that I had to apologize for, ask for forgiveness for. And took me on a really dark journey of a lot of pain, but cleansing of the heart, just a lot of cleansing of the heart, which was really needed for me to follow through on to where I am now.
Now, from what you're saying and what I've picked up from your book, you were a spiritual person, a religious person, so your relationship with God has been important to you.
My whole life, I think, as a child, I always loved the Lord, or we always went to church, but really never had that personal relationship with God until I, became broken.
That's interesting, isn't it, how that works sometimes?
Yeah, never got into reading the Bible and the Word and understanding it, and then it just kind of started flowing, and that's all I wanted to do was just learn more about him and, forget my selfish ways.
Your book is divided up into very small sections. Let me just ask you one point here. At the end of each section, you have kind of five or six lines. Is that just for artistic value, or what do you expect of the reader?
Well, as they read each little section in hopes that they would, feel something in their heart that kind of clicked, that they would, jot something down and not forget it so that maybe it would help them cleanse whatever came from them at that point out of their heart and soul to help them, get rid of whatever they're dealing with. Something in them must have, made them want to write something down.
I'm going to go with you and with our listeners, of course, through some of the sections here that you have put together. And one of the early ones is called, and by the way, folks, if you're listening and you're going to want to get this book, it's an easy read, it's very personal, and yet it will speak to your situation, whatever it is. And there are Bible texts by each section. This one is called Listening Up. We do a lot of talking to God sometimes, but what does this listening up bit mean?
Well, I think we sit and we listen to our friends talk and talk. I mean, even when I was in my pain, I wanted to, listen to my friends. But, of course, after that, we need to stop and listen to God and what he wants us to do. And you can get all the advice you want, but in the end, you need to listen to him. He may totally give you a different reason for doing something that you, you were going to do, that he doesn't want you to do, that has nothing to do with his obedience.
But the ability to do that may have a lot to do with our picture of God and how busy he is to listen to you and me.
Right. I think, that's why you have to sit. You really have to sit and really go deep. And we have such a terrible tendency of just sitting there for 5 minutes, and our anxiety and our uncomfortableness with ourselves makes us just get up and move. And we need to go through that, and probably it's a painful thing, and that's why we don't want to sit still. And the only way you can do that is to be totally by yourself with no distractions. And that's a very hard thing to do.
I was going to say it's hard to find sometimes.
Oh, my goodness. Sometimes I go out and get in my car at the end, park at the end of the driveway when I have company just so I can just be with them all by myself.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But this seeking out of a quiet time, or in one of your sections you even call it the pause, that you know we have here, and that is scriptural, isn't it? Because we find various characters in the Bible who did that.
Well, we're supposed to pause. Otherwise, we don't. He may tell us, but if we don't pause, we're not going to go, is that what I'm really supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's from a friend, you should pause and try to figure it out. And even in a divorce, when you're so distraught and you're so angry and you're so upset and you want to lash out and you're in pain and you're crying, just to pause before you do anything. Because, you know, in one section of the book, I talk about how I lashed out at my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she had nothing to do with the divorce.
Yes.
And then I had to go back and tell her how sorry I was. Because she had nothing to do with it.
In times of anxiety and stress, we sometimes get our friends and enemies mixed up, don't we?
Oh, my goodness. Because we don't want to be alone, so we kind of make them all our friends. And,
yeah.
We don't need that. And that, of course, takes us down another path, and a longer path,
mm-hmm.
of in the wrong direction of healing. If we just follow the right one, it wouldn't take us quite so long. But we want to do it our way.
In reading your book, I'm getting the impression that you're wanting to see the best in people.
Always.
And that sometimes has made maybe your discernment not as clear as God would have you have it.
Yes, I mean, not even as a year ago, I had met someone, and he was older, and I thought he was very full of the Bible and knew more about God than I did, and I believe that he was a gift from God after all these years, and dated and married him in a very short period of time, and he just left within 3 to 5 days after the relationship, and I was just distraught and just did not know what happened. And if I would have probably, as I know now, not probably, I know now, I should have paused longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have followed through with what I said to him, are you kidding, when he asked me to marry him.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do that, and I should have done that. And that was painful after all these years. They just pop in whenever you think you're in a good place. That deceiver will just pop in and take you away.
Being Christians, being spiritual people, this sort of thing isn't supposed to happen to us, but does.
You know, that is so true, because I, after that happened, I just was beyond, like I said, myself, and didn't know what to do at that moment. But within seconds after the pause, I didn't want to pity myself, and I just, because I've done that way too many times, and I just went to my knees and said, I knew it was going to be hard, but God, I need you right now. Just please help me right now. And he did. I went to sleep, which was kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But we just move so fast in today's world. Everything is fast. And so I think that's why we make our fast decisions, even in our personal life, concerning our hearts.
Even in relationships.
Everywhere we go, I mean, we walk up to a counter and someone doesn't give us the right change, and I see people getting angry, and why do we get angry at that?
Yes.
It's deception within ourselves.
And emotions on all spectrums, either negative, you mentioned anger, or I haven't known you, but I've talked to you online, and now you're my friend. Scary.
The online thing just is amazing to me. It's how we communicate these days with technology. And there is a good side of technology, too. I mean, we can visit families and friends. But we do let a lot go, and we believe things that we shouldn't believe.
Yeah.
People change their names so that, you know, we don't recognize them. And that is a sign right there that, why am I talking to you? That there should, you know, I know a lot of women that will say that they saw so-and-so on the Internet that they were dating, and he's under a different name. And they just believe the fact that he just doesn't want his children to know.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Women do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sign from God saying, don't talk, that person needs to go to the wayside.
Yes.
Follow my path.
And I suppose that part of it is pride, isn't it? We'd like to believe that our judgment's pretty good.
Well, I think that's why the deceiver had to come into my life after all these years.
Hmm.
I feel that I maybe was beyond that, and that no one could hurt me like that again. And God just wanted to show me that it could. And even though He brought me out, God brought me out really fast. It was like a test to see if I would come back to Him. If Satan came in, what was I going to do? And He dropped me to my knees again. I had to humble myself again.
So in some sense, it's really kind of a spiritual pride, isn't it?
It was very spiritually prideful. And I didn't think it was, but a lot of it was. I thought I knew better. But it wasn't about me. It should be about God.
What does this section titled The Trap, what does that mean? Your text is Psalm 25:8. The Lord is good and does what is right. He shows the proper path to those who go astray.
And yes, and again, as for me and my deceiver, and even when I had broken my vow on page 157,
mm-hmm.
Not totally, but, you know, got out, he allows it because he wants to see if you're going to come back. He has to test you because he's taking you somewhere that he has to know that you're always going to come back before he moves you forward with him. And if you're not going to come back to him, he can't move you in the direction he needs you.
Hmm.
He has to know that you're going to follow him and tell the deceivers goodbye. No, I'm moving forward. He can't have the people talking about him that are deceiving him. It makes him look bad. He wants people to love and adore him because they see you doing wonderful things for God.
I really liked on page 73 your fighting back section. I've seen that not just in my own life, but in a lot of the people that I've interacted with. There is this rut that happens in our minds and in our lives that it's very easy to fall back into, isn't it? And I've talked to some people. One lady was talking to me when I was pastoring on the coast, West Coast, and she was a very successful lady in the community, in her work, her career. But she was really unsuccessful in her personal life. And I had to at one point say to her, if you're attracted to a man, you need to run the other direction. If there's someone you're not quite sure you'd really like, take some time. You might find out he's exactly what it is. But we fall into these ruts of the same situations, don't we?
Well, yes, and I think, you know, even more so with Valentine's Day coming, it's such a lonely time for singles. And I'm single, and I've been single for 10 years.
I see.
And you go through a deep, deep time of, you know, here comes another holiday. Everybody's going to be happy and full of love and going out to dinner, and I don't have anyone. But the dinner and the cards, that's not love. That's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the love of the heart. It's an expression of the heart. So I have learned to, like, call my children or get with other women, or I have some male friends, or go to, you know, do something with church or read my book, and to show and feel my love for myself so I don't have to abort and get out and run because I made another foolish decision.
Yeah.
I have to love myself enough to know the difference now.
And you have to understand and love the Lord enough to understand His willingness to forgive more than once.
He's forgiven me so many times.
Mm-hmm.
He just, that's when you just love and adore Him, because He's shown you over and over again that He cares so much about us, and He's just going to wrap His arms around you and tell you, come on, I'm going to give you another chance, and let's keep going. Don't stop now. We got out. You got out. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Let me lead this time. And the next lesson may not be the same lesson as that one, so He's going to use another one that He needs you to learn to go with the one that you just learned.
Yeah.
We sometimes think He's going to bring us the same one, but more than likely it won't be. It's something that He needs to achieve to make that one happen.
It's interesting that we, you know, have heard the words of Jesus about when He spoke to Peter about when we should, how many times should we forgive this person?
Mm-hmm.
And we say, well, yes, okay, I'm striving for that. But in fact, that's a reflection of our Lord, too, and His willingness to forgive.
You know, when you learn how wonderful forgiveness is, even the person that, you know, that I had the annulment and
mm-hmm.
had to leave the marriage, just takes such a weight off your shoulders. It's amazing. And then you almost, it just goes away. When it's after a while, it really truly does just go away.
Mm-hmm.
You have a new strength within you that's hard to explain.
Yes.
You're almost giddy sometimes because it feels so good. I was listening to T.D. Jakes, and he talks about how the man that was blind and how Jesus took him out of the city where he was and into a different part, different land outside of the city,
right.
And that's when he spat in the in the mud and then put it on his eyes, because he said the dirt inside the city wasn't even as good as the dirt was. You know, he wanted clean, and he didn't want to open his eyes until he was in beautiful surroundings. That was what he wanted him to see first.
That's wonderful.
And I think that, you know, I learned so much from that. I mean, that was just like one of those aha moments where if you just abort and get out of that environment, God will show you how much he loves you. And he'll go, look at me. You don't have to be blind anymore. You did it.
I teach part-time in a parochial school, and I was talking to some ninth graders, and we were talking about this whole business of relationships and dating and things like that, and explaining why premarital counseling is important. And well, but I know my intended, and I know him very well. And you say in one of your sections, it's really all a blind date, isn't it?
They are a blind date. We are such a funny group of people in this world that, you know, I mean, like you said, we're talking to them on the internet, and we're in love with them from another side of the world, and we want to date them, and we know nothing about them. And, you know, we have someone that calls us, and we have dinner with them, and we can't wait till they call us because we're already in love with them.
Yes.
Because they picked us one and chose us one time and gave us just a little bit of attention, and we're so lacking in attention that's when we deceive ourselves and we make the wrong turn. And God just wants us to pick him every single time. He's the one that's there every single time. And we just, for some reason, just walk the other way.
You really emphasize the necessity to keep immersed in the Word of God.
I'm amazed at the more that I learn, and of course since the deceiver was in my life in the last year, that it's really important, even to find one verse that fits you for the day. If you just read one verse that you know is going to help you all day long, you'll use it all day long. It's crazy how just God gives you that verse for a reason.
Yes.
And I'm in awe at the end of the day that how many times I've used one verse when I ask him at the beginning of the day, what do you want me to look up? And you think, what? But then you use it all day long, and then you get it after a while. And I think people feel that they have to sit down and read the Bible for an hour or 2 hours every day. And that's not what...
Beginning in Genesis and ending up in Revelation, yeah.
And that's not what God wants. He wants us just to share him. Even just hello, hi, how are you, and I love you, and remember one thing about me today.
And the technology that can be sometimes concerning can be very helpful here with all the things that we have. With CDs and iPods and all this stuff.
Yeah, I don't think we have an excuse anymore not to.
Right.
We tell ourselves that we don't have time, but we have so much time.
Helen, how would you like readers of your book to use it?
Well, I hope that they really find out how much they should love themselves. I don't believe that they can really love the Lord fully unless they find the love of themselves, and that's what he's trying to teach them, so that they can give that love to everyone. Once you love yourself for all the terrible things that you've done, that's why you fall in love with everyone you meet, because they kind of fit into one of those categories of somewhere or something that you've done in your life.
Yes.
There's no way you can judge them anymore, because you've been all of them, almost everything, one little thing. And I'm not saying that you were a murderer, but you were probably really unhappy. So that's why you can love the person that's unhappy, or the abuser. You can, because it's not because you want, you love the abuser, but you understand the pain that maybe they were abused as a child. So it's the love. It's love is so important.
The book is The Vow: A Journey of Truth. It's by Helen Elliott. Helen, where can people get your book?
At www.thevowbook.com.
Okay. Thank you for being with us today on LifeQuest.
Thank you. It was wonderful. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'll be back in just a moment.
for joining us today on LifeQuest. Here are your hosts, Dwight Lanoff.
Upcoming on the program of LifeQuest, in the future we're having a couple of books I'd like to tell you about. One is called Getting to Agape, Lessons on Love. It's by Al Mazzingo. And he knows, the author does, that everyone needs a message of hope and understanding and wisdom. But, he says, agape love comes from the Father. And so he's author of several other books. I think you'll find it interesting and encouraging, and a book you may want to look into. Another book that I'll be talking with the author on is called 52 Ways to Feel Great Today. Increase Your Vitality, Improve Your Outlook. It's by Dr. David B. Beeble from Florida Hospital. And he says, 52 Ways to Feel Great. This book is not only based on experience and observation, but these ideas have solid scientific evidence supporting their value in promoting health and enhancing your happiness. Well, these are just some of the books coming up on LifeQuest. I hope you enjoy this program. And if you have some suggestions of books that we should review and talk to the authors about, please write us here at lifequest@lifetalk.net. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net or write to LifeQuest at P.O. Box 33082, Knoxville, Tennessee 37930.